From Yellowstone National Park, this is What We Do. I'm Ashton Hooker.
And I'm Miles Barger.
Hey, Miles.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, good. How are you?
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Well, thanks for joining. We are joined today by Brett DeYoung.
Hello.
Thanks, Brett. Who is the Park Supervisory Telecommunications Specialist here in Yellowstone. So to kind of kick us off with this conversation about telecommunications, you know, cell towers, computers, all the like techie stuff that can be a little polarizing here in a park like Yellowstone. People like, you know, remote places without any connectivity. We're going to get into all that, but I have a little trivia for you first. So let's see. We're talking about data. This is a big park, a lot of employees, a lot of computers, a lot of storage. How much storage do you think is supported on Yellowstone's network? You have to take a wild guess.
I'll take a wild guess. 100 terabytes.
You are actually spot on. Oh. That's amazing.
I remember Mark's emails.
Good job. So to put that into perspective, I was like, what does 100 terabytes actually mean? So correct me if I'm wrong. This was just some brief Googling. So 300,000 digital photos require 1 terabyte. So if you multiply that by 100, that is 30 million photos. That's a ton.
That's a lot.
That's
of
a ton of data and storage.
Or 1 hour of 8K footage. Just kidding. Yeah.
That's probably 8K not too 3D. Far off. Yeah. But anyway, to get into this topic more, we have Brett DeYoung. Thanks for joining us, Brett. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. Good. So starting us off, where did you get your start in the National Park Service?
I started volunteering with the National Park Service. I came to Yellowstone right after graduating from Purdue, and I worked for the concessioner, and I worked with the Rangers at Old Faithful doing search and rescue and a number of other different things, other jobs that I did for the concessioner and risk management and fire safety. I worked with the fire marshal, and I worked with the safety office, and and in engineering office, I worked with the facility maintenance division. So I knew most everybody pretty well after the 16 years that I'd worked for the concessioner. And then one day I got a call from someone, and I applied for a job, and I walked across the street and I asked them where the cafeteria was, because the concessioner, they fed us every day, and they told me I had to bring my own lunch.
Oh
man.
So I'm still working through that.
Yeah, you're still learning how to, you know, feed yourself every day.
Did you, why did you first come out and start volunteering? Were you just an outdoors person before that, or?
Yeah, I came out here like most people do, because they want to experience the outdoors and they want to live in it, and they want to, you know, rather than taking a vacation, they want to walk out the door and do it on their time off. And, so yeah, I was just drawn to that. And it was a really close-knit community down at Old Faithful. And we ended up working winters and summers seasonally. And, you know, we all worked closely with the Rangers. So it was just nice to spend time and broaden our sphere. So.
And what was it? Was there something about Yellowstone that drew you here? Or was it just kind of, you just happened to
Not
come
much,
out here?
Really. Yeah. No. It was, I was graduating from college in 1989 at Purdue, and it was during a recession at the time, and I was gung-ho to start paying off student loans, and I had a friend that kept saying, I love, you know, I've been working summers in Yellowstone, and you should come out. And I said, okay, let's come out for a summer. And I think you hear that story a lot. People get hooked.
Got hooked.
So, yeah. And my wife came out eventually, not long after that, and we just made a home of it.
Cool.
It's such a big park, and there's so many opportunities. You can move all over the place laterally, and there's a lot to do here. That's a benefit of a great big park.
So as a supervisory telecommunications specialist, do you have a typical day on the job? Is there even such a thing? Does it vary by season? What does that look like for you?
Most days are typical. When you get into a supervisory position, you don't get out in the park as much. So there's a lot of office time. which is, you know, can be the downside. The upside is that you work with all, you know, you have a staff and they become your team, and that's fun too. And you kind of live through them in a lot of ways. But a typical day, so we support Yellowstone's dispatch center, which is an 8-position dispatch center. It's FCC licensed. And it's, you know, it's an alarm monitoring center. It's a very busy center, as you all know. And it also supports the communities of Gardner and Corwin Springs and Silvergate and Cook City. And, but we support all their technology, all their systems, their 911 systems, their CAD systems, that's their dispatch system. And it's very complex. So if I didn't get a call in the middle of the night from a dispatcher, then the first thing I do is when I get up at 4:45 in the morning is I look at my phone to see if there's any emails from any dispatchers, and maybe a radio system wasn't working correctly, or they weren't getting, you know, when a 911 call came in, it didn't give the phone number or the address, or it was a, you know, misroute or something like that. So I look for those first thing just to see what the day is going to be like. And if there's none of those, then I, like many employees, live outside, you know, in outside communities. I live in Immigrant up in Paradise Valley. If anybody's watched the Yellowstone TV show, it's not like that, but it's very pretty. But I live, you know, so it's an hour commute for me. And we have a rideshare program that we've been doing since 1991. Where employees all ride together, and it's a great thing. So, and I've been the program manager of that since 2016. But so sometimes I'll drive the van and drive a bunch of my employees to work. And anyway, so typical day. Then we get here at 7. A lot of us work 10-hour shifts and get in at 7. And I go around. I work with all my staff. I see what the telephone people are up to, what the IT people are up to, what kind of challenges they have, what's on the agenda for the day, what the alarm shop's doing, what the radio shop's doing. And after I've caught up with all of them, then it's like a lot of other jobs. It's emails and contracts and phone calls and meetings.
Gotcha. And so that day that you said you walked across the street to start working for the Park Service. Obviously, you didn't start out as like a supervisory telecommunications specialist. So can you tell us kind of your path from there to where you are now? Like, did you have other jobs in the meantime, or?
Yeah, that was pretty linear. I came across the Duo Fire Alarm Systems project. I was working in the engineering department with Zantera, and we had tackled some big fire alarm system deficits. We took care of big buildings with Zantera, the concessionary. We did the Old Faithful Inn, the Lake Hotel, you know, really important overnight occupancies where you can't have, you know, you can't empty the building in the middle of the night because of a nuisance alarm. We did that sometimes. So we got things kind of under wraps over there. And then there were some deficits over here and they wanted me to tackle that. So that's the job I got hired for. But then I became the alarm shop supervisor. And then my supervisor at the time that hired me, he went on to be the superintendent of American Samoa National Park. So then I detailed in his position and eventually I got the position. Oh, so
nice.
And he's now the superintendent of Death Valley. So. He never liked the cold.
Yeah. I was about to say, not the place to be if you don't like cold here in Yellowstone.
But an interesting thing about him is he hiked every single trail in Yellowstone.
Wow.
Wow.
And he was here 5 years. His name was Mike Reynolds, and he's still the superintendent of Death Valley. And then when he completed that project, he started hiking them backwards.
Oh, wow.
And then he left for American Samoa.
Wow.
So, yeah, I haven't
done that. That is an accomplishment.
I'd like to do that, but it hasn't happened yet.
So you did... You kind of ran through all of them, but I'm just curious if you could restate all of the different systems that fall under telecommunications in the park, because I think people, I mean, I sometimes forget, you know, I'm like, I think I'm covering all of them and I forget fire alarms or something like that.
I forget sometimes too.
Yeah, there's a lot.
There's a lot.
And then we're reminded. So the radio systems is a really important one, the land mobile radio system. We've got a big complex system, and that's what the rangers use to talk, and we send out pages. We still do pages for our advanced life support crews and EMTs. Law enforcement. There's resource protection people that are doing bear jams and animal jams and things like that. And it's just safety, too, for people working in the backcountry so they can communicate. So radio is a really important thing. We have telephones. We've got about 500 landlines and 180, 190 cell phone lines. So we manage all those contracts and all that hardware for that and the network that it takes to push it out there. The IT department, which is, we've got a very complex network to get it out there. As you know, the chief information officer came out here one time from the Department of the Interior. He said the last mile is mammoth. So everything we do to get that from here, from Mammoth to the rest of the park is magic. It takes a lot of effort and a lot of different methods. So, then we do internet services. We do all the right-of-way permits for the cell companies. There's a few of those in the park, five towers that we try to hide. There's what else? Telephone systems.
Alarm systems, you were saying.
Alarm systems, yeah. Mm-hmm. Fire alarm systems, security alarm systems, video security.
And then the dispatch, which is, wow, like you said,
yeah, dispatch support,
very
yeah,
complex and very important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I hope I didn't leave anything off so any of my staff is disappointed. But yeah, we do all that and we try to keep it behind the scenes. So mm-hmm, the visitors come and they see the resource and the animals and everything. And this goes unseen, but it's critical to keep them safe. And
right.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Very important stuff behind the scenes that a lot of people, yeah, like you said, they visit and they would never know.
Hopefully.
What's going on? Yeah, hopefully. That's the goal.
Well, and I think a lot of parks in different settings have a lot of these things. They don't have to manage them themselves. You know, we're such a big place. It's like,
yeah,
there's cell phone towers outside of smaller units or telecommunication stuff kind of comes right up to the edge. Not that they don't have things that they need to do, but, you know, I always tell people Yellowstone, it's like a mini state in a lot
mm-hmm
of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. Yeah. If you can have a cell tower at a gateway community that covers where you need it to cover, that's great. We don't have to put it on federal land, but mm-hmm, we don't, that just doesn't work here. Just doesn't reach far enough.
Right.
Yeah. So what would you say is the most important skill for your job?
Most important skill, prioritizing. Mm-hmm. Technical aptitude is the obvious one. A broad array of technical experience.
Yeah.
You have to be kind of a generalist in a lot of ways and, you know, a specialist in others. But yeah, prioritization is really important. Essentialism is really important, which is kind of like prioritization, but doing what's most important all the time. And finding focus is really important because multitasking is kind of a defeatist sort of a skill. I think you do a better job for your customers when you're more focused and less multitasking. Mm.
So. Yeah. And so, what would you say is your favorite part of your job?
Well, it's probably a boring answer, but it's true. I really like coming in and working with all my staff, you know, seeing them face to face. We do have some remote workers, especially in IT, and they're great. And it's really fun to interact with people at different parks and different parts of the country. But, you know, interacting with the staff, they're enthusiastic. A lot of them have been around for a long time. And you bounce ideas off each other and they resource and network. And so that's great. The other best part about the job is probably going to like remote repeater sites up on mountaintops, and we'll hike to some of those. Sometimes we fly, we try not to. But skiing to them is pretty cool. It takes a lot of planning and you got to be safe, but that's a great way to stay connected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been some good trips up to Mount Holmes the past few years, I feel like.
Yeah.
Among others.
Yeah.
But I know I've seen some pictures from that. Challenging conditions. Things always like to go down in the middle of the winter, it seems like.
Yeah. And we do everything we can to make sure that they're going to hold up for the winter, you know, do all that work in the summer. Mm-hmm. But occasionally they quit. So you have to travel.
Yeah. We get some less than ideal weather in Yellowstone sometimes.
Just we do.
Sometimes.
We certainly do. Sometimes you can't fly. So you have to take other methods to get there. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just have to wait.
And where are those located?
We have 8 mountaintop repeaters. We have one on Druid Peak in the Lamar that you can't see. We We have one on Henderson Mountain, just outside of the park. We have one on Top Notch, which is in the park. We have one on Mount Washburn, which you can drive to for about 4 months of the year. That's quite a luxury. We have one just outside of the park on Survey Peak, and right on the edge of Grand Teton National Park and the Jebediah Smith Wilderness area, which is funny. You have to land the helicopter right on the park side because that's
right.
Recommended wilderness, and Jebediah is actual wilderness, so no helicopters. So it's like an invisible line right on the peak. And then there's also Sheridan has one with a 1926 New Deal era fire lookout up there.
Wow.
That's really cool. And Mount Holmes, there's one on there. There's one on Purple Mountain. And the Mount Holmes one was inside a 1926 fire lookout, but it got struck by lightning and went down in a blaze. So let's see. Did I miss any? Oh, Bunsen Peak also, which is just outside of Mammoth.
Which people can hike up to if they want.
They can.
Yeah. And see that one.
The Holmes one made me sad. That was the first one I'd ever hiked up to of the fire lookouts.
Yeah.
I was sad when that burned down.
Yeah.
Such a cool location.
Sure was.
And so you mentioned your favorite parts of the job. On the other side of that, what are some of the toughest things that you encounter in your position?
The toughest things is when things crash. That's a real challenge. Those middle of the night calls, you have to wake up and be lucid and understand what the problem is and who your resources are and, you know, get to the root of the problem pretty quickly. It always amazes me how quickly we can restore something that seems catastrophic. So, you know, that's really challenging. Other things, like we may have links go down for days and have... There's been two times in my career that we lost Mount Washburn, which is kind of a hub, and we didn't have any cell service at all. And there's a lot of medicals in Yellowstone. There's a lot of, you know, heart attacks and life flights and things like that. And when someone can't call 911 from an interior location, that burden just falls on us really hard. And if you're in the middle of something else and that call comes in, you're just, you know, there's really no backup for you. So you just have to be fully engaged. Last fall that happened, and there's only been a handful of times that it happened, but last fall it happened the night before I direct a running race north of Yellowstone. And so as the director, I was very busy and probably going to be up all night, but this happened in the middle of the night. So managing those two things was hard. So
yeah, I can imagine emergencies like that can be very stressful.
Exciting.
Yeah. Exciting and thankful that you're there to assist.
But then it's good to, I mean, there's always an upside to a challenge, you know, an opportunity with a challenge, but just having a phone full of resources and knowing that I can get a hold of, you know, a power company representative in the middle of the night, a cell tower company representative in the middle of the night, and I can get these things back up with their help. Like the, you know, everywhere in America, the linemen are always out in the worst times, mm-hmm. and they're kind of heroes when it comes to that sort of stuff. So that's the role we have to fill.
Yeah. So even with those types of difficulties or challenges that you might encounter, what keeps you here? What keeps you working for the National Park Service? Why do you stick around?
Gosh, all kinds of things. I mean, just the whole mission of it. Oh, you know, one of the biggest things is just that this is just still an intact ecosystem, and you know, all the predator prey relationship, all the predators that are restored, and that's amazing. And I've been here 30 years, and you don't get over that. So that's a thing, and then the people, and I don't know, I could go on and on. Yeah. Skiing's pretty good.
Yeah, maybe not this winter.
I try not to talk about skiing too much because you guys only have so much time.
Yeah. We'll have to hear some ski stories another time. But do you have in all your years being here in Yellowstone, working for the National Park Service, do you have a defining moment? Is there a moment that sticks out to you that you're like, yes, like that's why I work here and it was super rewarding?
Okay, here comes a ski story.
Okay, perfect.
We had Mountain Homes, and Miles, you know, reference this, but in 2011, Mount Holmes, the repeater antenna went down in December, and there was a big storm coming in. And the Mount Holmes repeater is also used by Montana State Patrol for Highway 191 outside of the park where there's a lot of accidents. It's a dangerous road. It's a pretty important one. So, but we couldn't get a helicopter in because the storm front was coming in fast. So we decided we were going to ski it. So it was a team of three. It was another guy. Dustin Seen, he was a radio tech with us. Now he's the superintendent of Bighorn National Monument and Bighorn Recreational Area and some other stuff. And Doug Krause, who's our Heltech foreman. We put together that trip in December, which there isn't much daylight. And we thought we'd stay in the Winter Creek cabin on the way in. We opened up the door and it was about a half inch deep and mouse poop. So we said, no, nope. We're not going to do that. We thought we can push to the summit. So it was a real big effort. We got to the summit and I got the cabin opened and the storm was starting to pick up. And this is a 10,300 foot peak. You know, it's a big effort. It took hours. And
it's a long ski in too, right? I mean, it is
a long ski. Yeah. It's a
10 miles.
Yeah.
One way,
it's right? eight okay. hard miles. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So yeah, we got the cabin opened up. We got a temporary antenna installed, testing it out, and then we got that door closed. Then the storm came in and just blew so hard all night. It just rattled that fire lookout all night. But that was pretty neat. We were testing the radio from inside, and we were talking to Montana Highway Patrol on this really remote site. And next morning, we ski out. It was nice.
Oh, that's super cool.
So that was a good, good trip.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was a defining moment, but that's one of the good ones.
Yeah, definitely memorable, it sounds like.
Yeah.
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 So you said about 30 years you've been doing telecommunications stuff in Yellowstone, right?
Yeah.
I feel like, of course, all fields change over time, but I feel like telecom's maybe the fastest changing field in the past 30 years, I would venture. So what's it been like to see... I mean, even I'm trying to think, my first summer here was 2006. And I think there was like a payphone in our dorm. I mean, that, you know, there was no internet that we could even use or my cell phone didn't work unless I drove a long way. I would think I was at Canyon. And you were here well before that. So what's it been like to see the change? Because now I'm at home and I can stream 4K movies from a satellite. You know, it's so different.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So my first summer was 89 and we had a payphone and we couldn't get radio stations and we couldn't get TV stations. We watched VHS movies at the pub. That was fun. But it has changed a lot. And that's always a topic of discussion. And whenever there's some sort of new proposal, we get a lot of comments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've noticed that people are very invested in the connectivity in Yellowstone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's two different aspects to your question. There's the expectation of a wilderness experience or a historic experience as well. But then there's also keeping up with what the needs are. And then, you know, we're also a government agency, so we're on a government network and we have cybersecurity issues and we have to protect those perimeters like vigilantly as much as any other government agency. Mm-hmm. So we're always protecting ourselves from threats, you know. So that's the biggest agent of change these days, is keeping up with that and all the training and what we have to do for that. But everything in the middle between then and now, you know, we've gone from, like you said, you had a cell phone, there was very few towers. Mm-hmm. We've added a few. We've definitely put a stop to more towers, but there was a point when Suzanne Lewis was the superintendent and she said, I'm the only one who's going to have a cell phone. And then, you know, then that expanded a little bit and now we've got 150 of them out there because it's kind of a tool that everybody has to use and the cost has gone down. But so, yeah, that's a big question. You know, it's changed. Yeah. A lot has changed. And we're fortunate to have some people that have been working in IT for 35 years, which is pretty neat because it's fun to hear their stories.
Mm-hmm.
But we also do have a wireless communications plan that the park put together in 2009, and that limits a lot of our wireless technology. So the intent of that is to not have cellular service on the roadways and in the backcountry and limit it to the developed areas and only specific developed areas, which is a bit of a compromise. You can, this is still one of those places in the lower 48. You can drive from Mammoth to Old Faithful and not have a cell signal for, what is that, 52, 53 miles?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just, it's so interesting to see, especially with how ubiquitous internet connectivity has become everywhere. I think sometimes visitors come and they're just like, some people come specifically for that and other people are just shocked. They're like, what?
Yeah.
What do you mean my Google Maps doesn't tell me where to go or like, where can I get Wi-Fi here? Yep. And there's one place, it's 3 hours away.
Yeah. I get the visitor comments and both perspectives.
Yeah, exactly. In both directions. Yeah.
Sometimes in the middle, but usually strongly one way or the other. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're getting into the nitty gritty here. If somebody were to go on USA Jobs and want to apply, you know, to work in telecommunications, what series would they be looking for?
Well, the telecommunication series is the 0391. Electronics technician, which is our radio technicians and alarm technicians, are 0856. And the IT specialists are 2210 or 2210. And that's a really fast growing series because everything is connected by networks now. So radio's connected, telephone's connected by networks. So that's a good one to look for. And there's a lot of recruiting going on in the IT world. So you could, in my branch, you could be any one of those threes.
Okay. Three. And so are the opportunities available from like entry level all the way up? What does that look like?
Yeah. 7, 9, 11.
Okay.
13.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so what types of training, or anything like that would people need to get into that type of work?
You just fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm kidding. A variety of stuff. Radio technicians, we hire a lot from the military because they get really good training.
Oh, yeah.
You know, setting up antennas and repeaters and base stations and microwave network extenders and things like that. But anyone who's worked with radio frequency technology, IT, there's all kinds of, you know, you can be Cisco certifications, you can be, you know, graduate in computer science. We've hired those. A lot of people just gain a lot of knowledge and experience from jobs. And so as a hiring official myself, I look for all of those things. Myself, I have a bachelor's in the School of Technology with a specialty in organizational leadership. So I'm, you know, I'm a lot of, you know, leading a group as much as the technical. So, so it varies. There's no straight track.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll kind of find that in the Park Service as well. People kind of come from all kinds of backgrounds as well. So
I think knowledge and experience ways is, you know, counts for more on a resume for this line of work than a degree does. But I don't know. We've hired some recent graduates too. So
do you have any advice if people were interested in applying or, you know, getting that experience? What advice would you give for them?
You know, Yellowstone, we feel like we're really specialists. A lot of small parks have one technology person and everything's thrown at them. But we're really, as far as the industry goes, we're generalists. So if you're in IT, if you're doing like system administration, I'll also learn about networking and also learn about cybersecurity and learn about maybe coding, you know, so branch out a little bit. And if you're, you know, if you're into radios, also learn about networking so you can do radio over IP. So I would say that those are important things to do. If you want to work for us doing fire alarm systems, get like a NICET certification, you know, National Institute for Certification and Engineering Technologies. And that tells me that you really know the codes, you know, the fire codes in and out, and you're not going to build a system that's not going to work.
Cool.
Those are a few tips.
Yeah, that's great. And so finally, the last question we like to ask everybody is just about your personal experience, any memorable experience you've had. It could be either in Yellowstone or any other national park, work or personal time. Do you have a moment that sticks out to you?
Yeah, the 5 years I worked in the Bear Den ski shop at Snow Lodge.
Yeah.
that was the peak of my career, not of my pay, but
tough and how it works.
Yeah. But it's been going up and down ever since. So yeah, that was great. We worked there the last year that it was open. It was the Snow Lodge then was nothing more than really, it looked like a roadside motel. Mm-hmm. It was cheap. You know, anybody could afford to stay there. The people that came to visit, they were all interesting. And the Bear Den ski shop was a log cabin with a wood stove right next to it. And that was great. They built a new hotel, the Snow Lodge Hotel, and the ski shop's in the gift shop now, and it's all still good. But those were good days back then. There was quite a community back then too. They were really, really strong skiers and outdoors people, and just a lot of fun.
That sounds awesome.
And many rangers worked in that ski shop too over the years before they moved over to the Park Service.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I think that wraps it up.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us, Brett.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. It was fun.
Well, that's it for this week's episode of What We Do. Thanks again to our guest, Brett DeYoung. If you like what we do, rate and review the show wherever you listen. Every positive review helps new listeners find the show. If you have questions or want to learn more about a particular job, contact us using the form at go.nps.gov/whatwedopodcast. Thanks for listening.